I'm Mike, and you are listening to the Hardtack Military History Podcast. Hardtack is a military history podcast and contains mature themes, content, and some crude language. Listener discretion is advised. The opinions and analysis expressed are that of the producer. Now, put on your Kevlar. Secure your Lickies and Chewies, and prepare to take cover for this episode of Hardtack. Hello, and welcome to Hardtack episode 32. It has been a few months since the release of our last episode, and I appreciate your patience. A few housekeeping items as usual, and we will get into the episode. Don't forget to check out the Hardtack socials found via Linktree in the episode description, or by searching Hardtack on Instagram and Facebook. The Hardtack Twitter, or X, has been permanently shut down as I find the platform to be quite the cesspool, and I'm not happy with the direction it's gone. You can also visit the website and leave a comment at hardtackpod.com. Please leave a review on whichever platform you use to consume your Hardtack and hit the subscribe button. Doing so increases the show's visibility and exposes it to more listeners. You may also contribute to Hardtack's production through Patreon, just by searching Hardtack Podcast. Lastly, you can contribute through our host site, Spotify for Podcasters. So if you listen to the last episode, you know that originally this episode was intended to cover the mystery of Celtic Wood, a World War I event that was a part of the larger Battle of Passchendaele. But I chose to place that on the back burner for a bit. However, I do plan to revisit that, and it will be a future episode. And instead, this episode will be the first of its kind and feature an interview with our guest, the producer, director, writer, and editor of the five-part docuseries War Movie, The American Battle and Cinema, Steve Summers. War Movie is a documentary series that examines not only the history of war and American cinema, but how this medium has shaped our country's perspective on conflict, foreign policy, race, masculinity, and national identity. When I looked at the IMDb website, War Movie was summarized as follows. Cinematic depictions of military conflict have been common since the first crank of a shutter. From early films like The Birth of a Nation, to recent entries like The Hurt Locker and Dunkirk, the atrocities of war have never strayed far from the silver screen. Whether praised by critics or criticized by veterans who were there, war films play an integral part of our cultural understanding. War Movie looks at the history of these films and attempts to understand why we're compelled to experience and reimagine our own violence on screen. Rather than a simple survey, War Movie examines our complex psychological relationship with the genre. By interviewing cinema studies scholars, creatives that bring these films to life, and veteran perspectives, War Movie unpacks the over 100-year history of military conflict on screen. So, let's get into the weeds with the man himself, Steve Summers. Steve, welcome to Hardtack, and thank you so much for being a part of the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Absolutely. So before we get into War Movie, let's talk a little bit about you. So if you can, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I've been a filmmaker for over 20 years now. And in that time, I've kind of evolved from what I call more of an art house type of filmmaker. Somebody who went to graduate school studying what's called video installation, kind of more the art world track, to going into narrative work, and then eventually moving into documentary film work, which I do now. And kind of, I try to mix all those things together in some way, but War Movie is definitely in the documentary world. It's pretty solid in there. So yeah, it's been a long journey, and it's taken me a while to get here, but it's good to have something like this.
Right. So you said long journey. How did you first began working in film and arrive at War Movie?
I've always liked film. I've always wanted to be involved in it. I I remember I was in high school and I wanted to go to film school, and my mother was like, well, you're really good at drawing. You should go to art school. And I was like, okay. So I did go to art school and, you know, kind of got this very artistic background, which is kind of great because I came at it from a different angle than a lot of, you know, traditional filmmakers do. But then I started to create video installations in museums and conceptual type of work, you know, not so much narrative based. After I got out of college and graduate school, I started teaching both at a high school teaching filmmaking, and I also taught at DePaul University. And these were definitely more narrative track curriculums. So I started to look into it, started to explore it myself, and, you know, just started making work in that fashion. And I enjoyed it. It was definitely different from the art installation type of filmmaking, you know, screenwriting and working with actors and crews and all that. But then slowly after time, I started to get into more of a documentary form, something that kind of, I started to explore very personal things in my life as far as like my family, some of the guys in my life, my father, my grandfather, and kind of doing these very small short form documentaries on them, kind of what's called essay filmmaking, which is not so much documentary, but a kind of personal exploration of a subject. But from that, I wanted to do something large, and I eventually drifted into war movies. The idea for the film didn't start off as a 5-part series. It was supposed to be a little bit more, I'll say artistic and a little bit more experimental. But over the course of working with the subject matter, it kind of morphed into what it is now.
Okay, so you talked about the narrative track. And the narrative track is, like you said, more scripted, more actor-centric. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's like what 99% of people think when they think of filmmaking is, you know, the movies we go to, you know, in the movie theater or watch at home now.
What have you found personally to be the biggest difference or maybe the biggest draw towards documentary work over the narrative track?
Well, documentary filmmaking has a whole different pace. There is no time frame. I mean, you have to make a time frame, or you can just keep going forever. But it depends on the type of documentary. But oftentimes in documentary, you don't know what the story is until you start going down that road, right? So with narrative filmmaking, you start with a script, you know what the story is right away, and then you just shoot it and then edit it, and that's it. It's done. And right. It's pretty, you know, it changes throughout that process, but it's pretty, everybody understands what's going to happen. What often happens in documentary is you may enter it with an idea or a question or, you know, or maybe just a subject matter, and you have to go down the road of research, interviews, exploring different ideas, perspectives on that subject matter. And that may take you in a totally different direction than you originally thought. And you got to be open to that, and you got to be, you know, be able to listen and hear. So it's a different beast, you know. And for me, sure, I like that because it allowed me to slow down and think about stuff, because by trade I'm an editor, right? So I'm used to putting things in order, taking them apart, putting them back together. And I really enjoy that. And documentary filmmaking is kind of like that. It allows me to edit throughout the entire process of filmmaking, if you will, right? I'm not held to a script, right? I can change it at any point and take it in a new direction. It also usually requires less people, less money, which is also a very, very big thing, you know, as a filmmaker. So, you know, it's just a different thing that, you know, both have pluses and minuses. So, you know, I enjoy it, you know.
Were you surprised at, let's say, the original direction that maybe you had for War Movie? You said it was supposed to be a little more artistic. It wasn't supposed to be a 5-part series, and to what it eventually developed into.
Yeah, I guess I was surprised. I think I needed to make something that was a little more mainstream. I'll say it like that.
I wanted,
sometimes artistic ideas and directions are great, but sometimes you miss, you know, really talking about something. You know, you can talk about it in a kind of abstract way, but if you're talking about, you know, facts or history, that needs to be explored in very concrete, manners sometimes. So, you know, the documentary started off like kind of examining why we watch these movies and, you know, what our kind of obsession with violence is when we, you know, watch films about war or video games or, you know, reenactments of battles, right? You know, people that do reenactments.
Right.
And it started down that road, and it kind of, you know, as I dove into the film part of it, it just got so big. It just got so, like, there was just so much here I wanted to explore. And that was fruitful enough for me to, you know, take what was supposed to be an hour and a half and make it 5 hours. And it was, I enjoyed making what I would call a kind of traditional form documentary because, you know, I think this needs to be explored in a language that, you know, can be accessible to a lot of people. So I think that was important.
And speaking of, you talked about why we like to watch violence, whether it's in video games or reenacting in a way or reenacting in real time, like the Civil War reenactors or Revolutionary War reenactors. What is it that draws us to that seems to be the question. So looking at war movie, what first brought you to really explore the history of warfare in American cinema? Because that's the big topic in war movie.
Yeah, I mean, all of my films stem from a very personal place, even if it's a larger subject like war films, right? So I started with this idea basically because I used to watch these films with my father. You know, they'd be on, you know, on cable constantly running. You know, it was either like Patton or Platoon or The Dirty Dozen or any number of those, you know, 70s to 80s movies.
Right.
They were just kind of always on, you know. And he'd always make comments about, you know, like, oh, that's not what war is like, or that's ridiculous, or, you know. And but the funny thing is my dad never served, so he never actually saw any of this stuff. So that was always funny. And then, you know, I was very much a child of the 80s. I was into Rambo and Red Dawn. And so, you know, I was kind of going down that path at one point in my life of like joining the military and going in that direction. So I had a lot of, you know, affection for that life and, you know, these stories and this, you know, everything around it. But as I kind of, you know, went a different direction after that. And as I became a filmmaker, I started to look back at these films and go, you know, they're more complex than we, you know, think they are, right?
Yeah.
There's been a lot written about them, but there hasn't been a lot made as far as a visual documentary. So I thought this was a very fruitful place because I know a lot of people love this stuff and there's just so much to explore and talk about.
Yeah, no, I can definitely relate. I mean, my father was in the Navy, but I grew up on, it's still one of my favorite movies, one of my favorite books of all time, The Hunt for Red October.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I so badly wanted to be a sailor and work on a sub, and I went the opposite direction and I joined the Army, and I'm not even combat arms, but, you know, it's funny how we're influenced so early by some of these movies specifically just like that. And yeah, you want to pursue it. And then where you end up, right?
Yeah. For me, it was Top Gun. I mean, ooh,
yeah.
You know, and then I got my heart broken when I was told my eyesight was too bad. And so I was well, that's okay.
Right.
That's all right. I'll just be a nerd and wear glasses the rest of my life.
So in the early beginnings of war movie, clearly you had this personal experience where you felt influenced. You felt, like you just said with Top Gun, I want to do that. I want to be that guy. And then things happened the way they happened. So what was your intent with war movie? Was it more personal, or was it you trying to show maybe the audience what it was that you experienced in an attempt to connect, like you weren't the only individual that had that experience? Because it seems to lay within the fibers of American society.
Yeah, I think that's what you said there is true. You know, the movie's not about my experience per se, but that was the root of it. So I know, you know, I could have this conversation with nearly any guy that grew up in the 1980s, you know, very similar, like, oh yeah, I remember that movie, you know, and like, you know, how powerful they were in influencing us. So
yeah.
that's kind of the root of like, I know these are interesting topics. I know this is stuff people have thought about or still think about. And they're still affecting us today, you know, with the current cinema. So yeah, it was, you know, it needed to be told. It was a story that needed to be explored.
So what would you say then with that need, that are the primary themes that you really kind of hit on and developed in War Movie? What stood out to you?
The big thing for me is that you see patterns throughout history of up and down of how these films are accepted, rejected, how they're needed at certain times, how they're used as both propaganda, but also for healing. So, you know, they serve a lot of different roles, and it depends on the time period, how filmmakers address warfare. It reflects whatever what's happening in society at that time, right? So they may talk about a war of the past, but it reflects current ideas or feelings within the society, right? I always say the Civil War is the greatest example of that, because if you look at the history of the movies about the Civil War, you can see this shift of what it is to represent the Civil War on screen. It changes, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, what is important changes. And that has to do with how we feel, you know, how we feel about, you know, the conflict, how we feel about race, how we feel about history. So, I mean, to me, that was so exciting to find this kind of correlation between the past and the present, always kind of reflecting itself and kind of battling, right?
So much.
Yeah, that was probably a big one. So, yeah, I guess another perspective I wanted to explore is the idea that these stories of conflict and war have been happening since, you know, man first chucked a rock at somebody else's head, right? You know, like, I'm sure that day the guy was around the campfire. He's like, look what I did, you know? So, you know, nothing's changed really. The technology's changed. The formats have changed. You know, we've gone from like painting and theater to, you know, to cinema and now into video games. So it changes, but it doesn't. And that's where the real interesting thing is, because it's a human experience. And it always has to go back to the human experience. And so, you know, some of the scholars that I talked to, they say very clearly, like, whether you're talking about the Vietnam War or the Battle of, you know, of Athens or, you know, in Troy, it's still the same. Soldiers are still experiencing the same, you know, the fear, the excitement, the anxiety, the, you know, all of those things.
It's so true. I learned that during my studies. Even I had a hard time. My studies, I particularly focus on World War II, which I think we're going to get into here. But when you look at Episode 4 of War Movie, and I don't want to spoil anything for anyone, but it's End of the Jungle. You got Shifting Tide for Episode 3, and then Into the Jungle, and we're looking at kind of some Korean War, Vietnam era, and there is, again, going back to that propaganda feel, and that narrative that was very much pushed by the government, and you have the Pentagon Papers and everything that came with that.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I was skeptical. I was so skeptical, and I was so judgmental, which as an historian, it's the last thing you want to be.
Yes.
You know, because you want to be without bias. But looking at American history and some of our actions in the past, it was difficult to reconcile that. But I did find some of that reconciliation and exactly what you just said, the human experience and separating the actions and orders of a government and its leadership from that of the common soldier or the combat medic or the infantryman on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as a theme, the human experience is so crucial, so critical, and it goes both ways, because any side in a war is just doing what they're told.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Foot soldiers, you know, I've talked to friends of mine who've been in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they try to ignore the politics because it doesn't really matter.
Right.
So
looking at the episodes, it's a 5-part docuseries, and it, it covers just, what is it, 120 years of warfare, American warfare. So with the five episodes, the first one is The Camera and the Gun, and that's 1900 to 1939. And episode two is The Good War, 1939 to 49. So we're talking World War II here. And then we have That Shifting Tide, already mentioned, for episode three, 1950 to 75. And again, that's Korean War era, Vietnam War era. Mm-hmm. Into the Jungle for episode four, 1976, 2000. So Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and everything that followed with the fall of Saigon. And then Brave New World, episode five, conclusion of the docuseries, 2001 to 2020. OIF, OEF, Iraq and Afghanistan, and what you could honestly call the modern day Vietnam. So looking at those episodes, a little bit of a synopsis, The Camera and the Gun. Can you tell us a little bit about what was the primary message in episode one?
Yeah, the first one, we really explore the idea of story, war story, and how that's, you know, like I said earlier, it's something that has always been with us. You know, it's been around the campfire, it's been, you know, painted on the walls, it's been carved in stone. The cinema is just kind of the new exploration of that idea. But as far as the title Camera and the Gun, there's a parallel between the technology of the camera, the motion picture camera, or even the still camera, you could say, with modernized warfare. So like maybe, you know, the machine gun or the cartridge gun, right? So they both kind of came about, 1850, 1860. Motion picture didn't come around to like 1890 or so.
Right.
But you start to see these two technologies really not only expanding what warfare is, right? The violence, the distance you can go and the amount of casualties you can get, but also the camera paralleled that, right? So we were able to take images right on spot of the violence as it's happening, or at least during the Civil War, right after it happens, right? So
right.
There was this kind of speed happening of like speed of image and speed of violence, actually. So I kind of say that these technologies were born together and they still continue to live together. And I kind of talk about that in the last episode of like now, you know, we see drones, right?
Right.
Drones have become this massive thing in warfare, and they're a massive thing in filmmaking. It's so wild, right? Computer technology, you know, everybody's a filmmaker now because we all have an editing system, right?
Right.
And computers are used out in the field, and they're, you know, do great things or horrible things. That depends how you see it.
Absolutely.
But my point was like this, there is this really bizarre and, you know, interconnection of these two things. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we see them kind of evolve together. The other thing we get into is the First World War and how that, you know, people tried to represent that cinematically. Actually, let me go back. There's the Civil War, of course, where we have, you know, lots of silent films. So we also have like Birth of a Nation, which is a very, very troubling film and very problematic. But it's also very technically from like a filmmaking, you know, discovering new ways of telling story, incredible. So,
Night Shot, right?
Yeah.
First Night Shot in film came from that.
Night Shots and, you know, all these different things, or at least he brought all these concepts and techniques together in one large film, right? Mm. Even the idea of like a feature film, what we know in just, you know, the old hour and a half to 2 hour or 3 hours now, it depends what you're watching.
Right.
It was born in that time period, right? And, you know, Birth of a Nation was definitely like a big deal. So, and also, you know, the First World War is also interesting because we also start to see the anti-war genre coming out of that war.
Oh, yeah.
Even that early, right? Even that early on, it's born, you know, like right out of the gate. So,
yeah, I liked, having reviewed the episode myself, I really liked the parallels that were drawn between how a gun is used and how a camera is used, especially seeing as how the two technologies really seem to have risen to some type of prevalence together at least in an American culture, American cinema, right? Where you shoot a camera the way you shoot a gun. It's that point. It's that perspective. It's that honing in on a target.
Yeah. I mean, even the wording is the same, you know, it's like, you know, we didn't come up with another word. We just took it, you know, I'm going out to shoot someone. I mean, it could be anything. That could mean one of two things.
Absolutely true. Yeah, no, I thought that was great. All right. So then we move into episode two. We've got The Good War. And I noticed that for the production, good is placed in quotes where, what do we mean by that? And we're looking at the 1939 to 1949 period. So we're looking at World War II, and then we're looking at the occupation of Japan, General MacArthur, and in the Pacific, obviously the fall of Germany and the Reich. Was there anything intentional in putting that in quotes? No different than we would quote, you know, the Greatest Generation.
Yeah, I think it's because we look back at World War II as a war that was worth the cost we paid. And so therefore it may be seen as the good war. I mean, that's a phrase that came, I don't know the origins of that exactly, but you've seen it thrown around. And, you know, I think Hollywood was very important in representing that good war, right? That idea of like, we're going out there, we're fighting for, you know, defending freedom and all that, which was true. But,
sure,
you know, the glossiness of a Hollywood picture really, really sells stuff really well. And Hollywood really knows how to do that. And, you know, during World War II, they got together with the government and really pushed this stuff and really used cinema to push enlistment and get soldiers over there. And it worked. And, you know, but then, you know, there's the truth of the soldiers coming back and how they were affected when they came back. And then you start to see the film shift after soldiers get back. They're no more rah, rah, rah. They're dealing with, you know, psychological issues and, you know, not the stuff they could talk about when the war was going on. And so, right, you know, there's this paradigm shift that's really very interesting of that time, you know, only over a couple of years, you know.
And it goes back to that human experience again. You look at the moral and ethical issues of World War II and being that savior kind of force. I mean, you look at Captain America. Or Alvin York or Audie Murphy, all these names. But it's so romanticized.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's easy to get angry at that. But I think, you know, one of the questions I asked scholars was, you know, were these propaganda films made by Hollywood at the time, were they important? Did they need to be made? And some were like, yeah, they needed to be. We needed to get, you know, soldiers enlisted, and they helped. Right. And so, but out of that comes this romanticism. So, you know, there's a pushback against that. So it's, you know, what I found out about the series is there's a lot of gray. You know, like, you know, if there's no answer to anything or no right way of doing something. So
absolutely,
you know, if one film says one thing, another film will say another, and you know, they're both right sometimes.
What's great here is then moving on from The Good War and your second episode of the docuseries, World War II, patriotism's high, you move to the shifting tide. And now we're looking at that Vietnam War era. We're looking at protest. We're looking at a lot of what you see in Forrest Gump, one of my favorite movies, right? there's so much of a shift. And I think that the episode title is more than appropriate, because the transition, the mindset was so different between World War II and Vietnam. So what was your intent there?
Yeah, my intent was to show that, you know, we were coming out of a war where everybody, most people, at least most Americans, were on board with. The definition of what we were set out to achieve was clear. The enemy was clear. The threat was clear, you know, all these things were very laid out. When we get into the 50s and the 60s and even the 70s, you know, these things start to, in the public opinion, start to become gray, right?
Right.
Communism is painted as very bad, but, you know, it's kind of an abstract thing. It's not really directly threatening us as, you know, as Nazi Germany was or Japan, right? So it becomes strange, you know, and sending people over to another country to fight somebody else's basically civil war for them, you know, people were like, what are we doing? You know, like, is this, do we need to do this? And so public opinion started to drift away from supporting, you know, these kind of ventures of going over into other countries such as Vietnam and Korea. So you start to see Hollywood also shift away. You know, they want, you see in Korea that there are films that are made to support, but they also start to criticize really early, right?
Right.
The government did go to Hollywood and try to get them on board like they did for WW2, but Hollywood was, they're like, yeah, I don't think so, you know, and they've tried this again and again with every conflict and, you know, Hollywood for the most part's backed out of it all. But yeah, you see, you know, shifting tide. The other thing you see too is the change of the studio system within Hollywood, right? So you have, you know, the 50s and 60s are pretty standard, but getting into the 70s, you have the fall of the big Hollywood system, kind of the breakdown. Mm-hmm. You start to see new, younger directors come out that are very liberal, very opposed to the war. So,
right.
You know, they're gonna voice their opinions. But it's also important to know that, you know, Hollywood wants to make money, right?
Sure.
They're there to make money, and they're not going to put something out there that people disagree with or would upset them or ruffles the feathers. That's, you know, it tends to be a financial risk. And so you see a lot of the same repeating, like, let's go make another World War II movie or, you know, or Civil War movies out west with the cowboys and the Indians, right? So
something we can feel good about.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, well, that's a thing you also see repeating is us going back to WW2 to make ourselves feel good.
Every time. I mean, Dunkirk, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, that's even very, yeah. Dunkirk is, you know, is trying to make us feel good about, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq, but
right.
I mean, it's a losing battle. I mean, that movie's about losing, you know, so.
Yeah. It's about losing, but it's about the human experience and the effort and the, we lost, but we stayed true and
yeah, we'll be back tomorrow moral. To do it. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So the shifting tide, because again, we want to focus on warfare in American cinema here with the docuseries. It also, I think, really highlights the synonymous experience between the actual warfare that was occurring and the social perspective.
Yeah, you have audience members that are becoming younger, or let me say they're not becoming younger, but film viewing audiences are becoming younger, right? Mm-hmm. So these are the kids that are getting drafted. So they don't want to see movies about warfare, or right. at least not about Vietnam, so to speak. And so again, studios stay clear of that. So the only real large scale movie made about Vietnam as it happened was John Wayne's Green Berets, which is just, if you've ever seen it, there's parts of it that are just so strange and out of touch that it's incredible. It's incredible they even made the thing, you know? So, although it was successful financially. So, you know, there were, you know, people that liked it, but, you know, as far as like winning over hearts and minds, it probably failed really terribly. I mean, that was his goal, is he wanted to make that World War II movie for Vietnam. And it was the time period wasn't the same anymore. Right?
No, it's not possible. It just wasn't possible. I mean, you have four different presidential administrations that were caught up with the release of the Pentagon Papers, and it just, there's no winning when the American public has found out that they've been lied to for decades.
Yeah. And it's funny, again, too, a lot of filmmakers, I mean, we still made war movies then, but they were often, you know, they became, if they were from about World War II, they were, you know, they were kind of critical of a situation, right? So they were reflecting that attitude of Vietnam, of like pushing against the, you know, the norms or the, you know, what the government wanted. But, you know, they were doing it in their own way. Like Shenandoah, the Civil War film, that's all about, you know, the Confederacy coming to recruit, you know, a man's sons to fight for the army. And he's like, right. No, you won't take them. You know, it was a little ahead of its time, but that's like a direct reflection of American society at the time.
It's not too different from today with the recruiting crisis across all branches.
Sure, sure.
So, yeah, definitely repeats. So then we have End of the Jungle. Now, this is 1976 to 2000. And I'm not going to say that there were no major conflicts as far as American interest went, but there were no major conflicts as far as American interest went. We had Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and there were some, Black Hawk Down was occurring during this time, at least the traditional, not the movie, obviously, but the event. So there were these conflicts, but we didn't have a World War II, Vietnam and Afghanistan and Iraq during this period. So what did you want as far as themes and exploration for this episode?
Well, I mean, the big thing we do see in that episode is the Vietnam movies do come out. Like they, mm-hmm. There's three, what we call three phases of the Vietnam War movies is the first one with Apocalypse Now and the Deer Hunter. Right. Tend to be a little more abstract. And then you get what I would say is the opposite direction or reaction to the Vietnam War or the Vietnam Syndrome with Rambo and these films of veterans going back to Vietnam to finish the job or get POWs out. Right. So this kind of just like, we're not done yet. We've got, America's not done yet. But then the real kind of like the true healing comes about, I believe, when you have Oliver Stone's Platoon, which is made by a guy that was over there. So he brought his own experience and what it was like and kind of wanted to make a film that speaks to the soldiers over there. And that's what he went out to do and, succeeded. And from that, you also see more and more of Vietnam films that kind of go in that direction, such as Full Metal Jacket. There's another one coming to my mind right now. Anyway, it'll come to me. But yeah, there's a whole slew of Hamburger Hill. Hamburger Hill is another great just the foot soldier and the not really shaming the soldiers, but just telling their story and just presenting it as it is. But then you get it, this is all happening in the 80s, and you also have Reagan and, all of that kind of pro-military stuff, right? Like I said, the stuff I grew up on. So you have Rambo. You also have, films like Red Dawn, which I had to explore because it was a little bit of a, influence on me. But Top Gun and, Hunt for Red October and Firefox, which is a personal favorite of mine, may not be the best movie, but it's a great Cold War movie. So you see this kind of push, trying to rebuild the confidence of the American people of our military strength again, right? And so you have these Vietnam War movies exploring, the failure of Vietnam, but then you have these other movies going, we're still great. So but then in the 90s, of course you have Desert Storm, and then you get into the era of rediscovering World War II. Coming up with the anniversary of it.
Yep.
And you see films like Saving Private Ryan, Thin Red Line.
Great films.
Yeah, which just kind of like, reignite the war film genre, in, ways that haven't been explored before. And there's lots of stuff I'm forgetting, right? There's the whole Holocaust films in there. And I also, the other
list and all
yeah, so the many. Previous episode, I didn't talk about the nuclear fear films, right? Of nuclear war. Yeah. So,
just look at Tom Clancy and his books and, Sum of All Fears and all these, narratives that were written into these fictional nuclear disaster. And then you marry it up with what we have going on right now in modern times. It's just, again, like you said, it just goes back into there's so much repetition.
Yeah, there is.
So what was Brave New World? Here we have 2001 to 2020. So we're talking OEF, Operation Enduring Freedom and Iraqi Freedom. We've got the pullout of Afghanistan. We've got COVID on top of all that, right? 2020.
Yeah.
There's so much here. And we talk about the recruiting crisis that we currently have going on and the use of cinema or the propaganda next to it, hand in hand, where we have youth that grew up watching failures in both Afghanistan and Iraq. The pullout and the backlash from veterans and those still in service, even in uniform. And you ask yourself, you know, here we have a modern day Vietnam, really, as far as reception goes, towards the end of everything. What do you do with that? So what was your theme?
I think what you said right there, what do we do with that, is exactly the theme, you know, because you get this sensation that filmmakers and the public don't know what to do, because we don't want to make the mistake of Vietnam. We want to, you know, honor our soldiers. We want to support them. But we also, you know, enough is enough, you know, with the conflicts at some point, right? Mm-hmm. So you see filmmakers trying to explore these ideas, and, you know, there's a lot about the, you know, the veteran coming home and trying to, you know, deal with, you know, PTSD and that stuff. But nothing really stands out for a long time till you get to films like The Hurt Locker and American Sniper and, you know, those type of films where I think it takes a little while for us to kind of figure it out. And I don't know if we still have figured it out. I still, in my heart of hearts, believe there will be a great movie of these conflicts that's going to come out, you know, something that's really daring, something that's really going to go push us in a direction we didn't want to go. Right. But, you know, again, you know, filmmakers tend to be, you know, again, they work for people that hold a lot of power and have a lot of money. So, it's like, you know, they got to be careful for how far they go. So,
okay. So that's a pretty good, I think, capture of the individual episodes of war movies. So let's talk about it a little bit more as a whole. What was your biggest challenge personally in bringing war movie to life?
For me, it was finding the story. You know, how did I want to tell this story? Because there's a million different angles I could have hit it from. Like, I could have just done it chronologically, which is what I ended up doing. I could have done it by conflict. I could have done it by, you know, just tackling, like, you know, violence or POWs or, you know, PTSD or wherever. You know, many different ways I could have done it. I ended up going a very kind of traditional route because that's how all this stuff just kind of actually happened. And it's easier to tell that story to people that may not be familiar with it, just in a simple, straight chronological order. So I kept it kind of, you know, traditional in that sense. But, you know, hopefully my goal was to get to those deep questions that, you know, I think sometimes documentaries like this don't get into, what I call getting to the bone. And to me, that was like, you know, why do we watch these films? What attracts us to them? That type of thing. You know, I don't know how much I really got into that stuff, but, you know, I try to work it in there and try to explore these very deep psychological questions about, you know, our attraction to warfare, right? And, you know, I mean, I could make a whole nother documentary on that, but, you know, I try to weave it in with the history of the films themselves.
So you mentioned a couple things. So this is going to be kind of a multi-part question, but I think they're all connected 100%. And so with war movie, which is not so much a study of war, but it's our consumption of war through the medium of cinema. What does that say about us as Americans, as a nation? Why do we watch it? And is it entertaining? Or is there this visceral need to experience it vicariously? Is it us attempting to seek understanding? Or are we addicted to it? Do we like it? There's so many little questions that you could pick apart there. Like you said, you could make a whole nother documentary on it.
Sure. Well, I think it's important to point out it's not an American thing.
No, by far, right? By far.
You know, as much as we'd like to think it is, no, it's, you know, it's humanity. We're strange creatures. The more I dived into this project, you know, the more like kind of, the irony of everything I saw of like, you know, how repulsed we are by, you know, when we see, you know, things on the news about war, but then we'll turn around and just throw some violence up on to entertain us. You know, it doesn't even have to be a war film, right? It could be, you know, a Marvel movie. It could be, you know, some kind of murder mystery, whatever.
Right.
Oh, I mean, we're
talking about the murder mystery genre, right? Like, yeah. Huge consumption of genre and podcasting is murder mystery. So yeah, I think you nailed something there.
Yeah. I think we like to view from a distance, you know. We want to feel something of that experience without feeling all of the experience. We don't want to feel the damage of that experience, right?
Right.
We want to see or try to question how we would react in the said situations, right? Again, you know, like whether you're on the battlefield or you come home and find your wife dead, you know, like you still like put yourself in that situation in some way, right? That's why we have movies. That's why we tell stories. It's about sharing experiences. And yeah, you know, like as much as we try to, you know, sanitize ourselves, I don't know if that's ever going to go away. You know, I think it's pretty hardwired into us. It's never going to go away.
So your docuseries here, and if I'm understanding what you're saying, there's this emotional draw, an emotional connection to violence and warfare. And cinema, like you said, there's that distance. And through a lens, shooting it, right, mm-hmm. whether it's from the end of a gun or through a camera, gives us that space to maybe explore some of the moral ethical dilemmas.
Sometimes. Yeah. I mean, it's all about the storyteller too. I mean, hopefully the storyteller director, you know, poses a lot of questions. I mean, I always say when I used to teach is the job of a filmmaker is not to give answers. And I even making this documentary is I didn't want to give answers. I gave facts, but I didn't want to give answers. I want to open up questions. And I think that's what a good film does. War film or any other type of film is you should walk away there and it should eat at you and make you think about stuff, right? That's the job I think film should do. Entertainment, yeah, okay. But, you know, if, you know, there's some famous saying, like if you walk out of a war film and are entertained, then something's wrong with that film. There's some line like that, right? It's like, you know, you shouldn't be entertained by this stuff because it's horrible. It's the worst. It's the worst part of being of humanity. So that doesn't mean we can't explore and make films about it, but it shouldn't, you know, should it be entertainment? It should be stressful. It should be, you know, you should come out of it exhausted. That's the point, right?
Right. I like that you said that because I know even just within the first few minutes of the first episode of this docuseries, there's a veteran that speaks and he talks about the warfare as the extremes of the human experience, that you'll see both the worst and the best of humanity in warfare. One moment you're killing your enemy. The next you've moved up as a unit and perhaps you're putting a tourniquet on the very individual that you shot in order to save their life. And that dichotomy is so difficult to not only grasp, but then to even attempt to explain.
Well, I think it's seductive for the average Joe, the non-enlisted Joe, I'll say, like sure. Me, you know, because life is mundane. It's a series of repetition. It's boring. And to watch on screen just such visceral action or movement or emotions or psychological testing of an individual, it's just like exciting for us. We want to experience that. So, warfare is the kind of you know, everything coming together for the worst and the best of us.
So you mentioned even for you, you said, like, you know, life is mundane, and it gives you an opportunity to kind of explore outside of that, maybe something outside of the comfort zone, whether it be ethical, moral, or visceral. Did you have your own emotional response as an editor for the series?
I don't know if I did. To me, you know, when you're in the trenches of editing, you kind of have to, you kind of check your emotion at the door, I'll say, because you're just kind of looking at it kind of very technical and just seeing how things flow and stuff like that. When I go back and watch things, I actually react more after I've completed it, watching it, you know, after I've had some distance from it, then sure. I am cutting it. Filmmaking is a weird experience because, yeah, sometimes you're so close to something, you don't really see it. And that, I mean, it can be a problem, but sometimes you need to do that. You need to just kind of look at it from a subjective point of view.
I find that really interesting. Just if I may for a moment, the parallel there, you talked about, you said being in the trenches of editing. And yeah. In editing, there is a closeness there's the potential for closeness, I should say. What you're viewing is not the same as what the audience views when they see that final product. Maybe you're exposed to more visceral content or to just more content in general. So it's interesting that the same way that in editing you have to be subjective, it's the same way that a soldier in warfare has to be subjective.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I never thought about that, but yeah, it's... You have to complete your mission, so to speak. It's easy to get lost in everything. It's really easy to, you know, to get lost in the forest of choice and possibilities and stuff. And,
right.
And you have to make hard choices, you know, what to leave on the cutting room floor. Yeah, I guess there's another parallel.
Right. And then later, you get to view the content after the fact, after you've edited or someone has edited and you've been engaged with it. And it's a different emotional experience. Not to say that there's PTSD involved, but it's the same for veterans coming home when they then have to reflect on everything that they've experienced and witnessed. Do you ever feel any secondhand from some of the content that you've viewed, any secondhand burnout or emotional fatigue from that, outside of just the work that's involved, just the emotion, the weight of what you've viewed?
Oh yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I can't remember the director's name, but there was a director that used to, when he was done shooting a film, would go mountain climbing for like 2 weeks before he started editing it because he needed to forget the film, right? Oh. He needed to forget the emotional experiences he had on set, because that's a whole weight of stuff you have there, right? And then going into the editing bay, he didn't want that to cloud what he saw in front of him. He just wanted to see it and react to what he saw as it is, not with the emotion that he had. So, yeah, I mean, and then after that, you know, I can speak personally, as soon as I'm done with something, I want to get the hell away from it, right? You know, I haven't watched the series and, even editing it, yet you watch it so many times, times that you don't want anything to do with it. And then, you know, if you get some distance and you get to see it on the screen with a room full of people, I won't compare it to PTSD, but it's pretty nerve wracking, you know, because you don't know what's going to happen. You know, I mean, there's some filmmakers and actors that don't go back and watch their stuff.
Sure.
You know, they just, you know, they have, it's very, very emotional connection, you know, it's like, it's weird. But oftentimes I'll go back and I'll actually enjoy watching it and be, oh yeah, I did a pretty good job of that. You know? 'Cause you're so nervous, it's not very good. And then you're like, oh, it's not that bad actually, you know? So yeah, it rolls both ways, you know?
So what for you, when you go back after editing, not just editing, but producing, directing, writing, and editing, I mean, you had your nails sunk into this, watching it as a viewer, experiencing it, let's say, with virgin eyes, if you will, what emotions outside of being that involved does war movies spur in you?
Well, are you talking about my doc or watching other war movies?
Specifically yours. Like, if you watched war movie as though you had zero involvement, and hey, I'm a viewer, I'm an audience, I'm a consumer. Right. How do you feel about it?
That's complicated. I think I would be proud of it in the fact that I think it differs from a lot of other work out there. There's a lot of documentaries about, the movies that made us or the toys that made us that kind of just shed light in our nostalgia trips, right? They're just be like, hey, you remember this and remember how great this was? Right. And my goal was not to do that. My goal was to be critical of these things, show love for them when love was needed, but also really dive in and explore. But I also wanted to hit a wide audience. I also wanted to bring people into the conversation. And I think I achieved that. And I think, if I watched it with, virgin eyes, so to speak, I think I would see that. I hope that communicates to the viewer of opening up conversation.
So was that the intent, opening conversation? If you were to boil it down, not to cheapen anything, but and from you being, this is your baby. Why should people watch war movie?
I mean, they should only watch them if they're interested in them. I don't think anybody has to watch them. My wife doesn't like watching them, and that doesn't make her any less of a person. But I think my goal is, media education, I guess I would say, media awareness, being aware of the power of what we're watching, of like how much goes into it, how much it has influence over us, even though, we may not notice it, just very subtle things. But to start to question it, enjoy it, but also, think about why am I watching this? What is this saying? How am I reacting to these certain parts and things like that? How do they, reflect how I feel about, the conflicts that are happening now, right? Mm-hmm. So, I just want people to start asking questions in themselves, right? If they see after they see this series and then they see a war movie, I hope their viewing is different, right? I hope they walk away seeing films differently.
To me, it very much feels like educational, like you're giving them all the tools they need to be informed on how to approach something to approach something subjectively, which is difficult because there's so much, especially in war movies, there's so much bias or there's an agenda to push. So it feels very instructional, where it's I'm giving you something, I'm giving you the tools you need to decide for yourself. Was that the intent?
Yeah, definitely. I don't want to, definitely tell people how to think. That's not my goal or job, but it's just to think, period. Just to, just don't consume and then move on. I think that's the worst. I think, you have to take things apart a little bit and explore them and just ask questions. And you can watch anything. I don't care what it is. And I think you can apply this idea to anything, right? Whether it be like the Barbie movie or Full Metal Jacket, right? They're both very smart movies. Yes. And they both can be taken apart in the same way, right? So.
Awesome. All right. Well, I don't have any further questions, and if there's nothing that you would further like to add, I will say I think we can bring Hard Tack episode 32 to a close. So, I really want to thank you, Steve, for being a guest on the show, for reaching out and providing us with what, honestly, I purchased it myself, is an amazing, amazing docuseries. Highly encourage everyone to view it, to watch it. Really great work. I love the content. I love the audio. You brought in some really great professionals. I saw that there were
Thank you.
scholars from just across the board with so many great things to say about how we consume cinema.
Yeah, there was a lot that was left on the floor too. So, I mean, you know, I have lots of stuff. So,
all right. Well, hey, you as the listener can purchase War Movie, The American Battle in Cinema on Amazon. The total runtime is 315 minutes. It comes in both DVD and Blu-ray formats, but it's also available digitally. So there will be links in the show notes and on the Hardtack socials to purchase in all of those formats for those interested. Highly encouraged, highly recommend, check out War Movie, The American Battle in Cinema on Amazon. Steve, you also mentioned in our conversation that you would be visiting the National Museum of the Pacific War in Fredericksburg, Texas on June 22nd for a screening of War Movie. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
All I can tell you right now is I will be there. I don't know what the time is, and I don't know what we're showing exactly. It'll be, I don't know. I don't know what we have planned. It may be one episode, maybe all of them. I don't know. That's a lot of film for one day. But yeah, if you're in the area, please come out, check it out. It should be interesting. I love talking to people about this stuff. So that's kind of, you know, for me, making the film is one thing, but showing it and then have people react and talk, open up this conversation is like why I do it. So yeah, come out to see it if you can.
Again, there's that human experience, human connection right there. So I can tell you, the listeners, I'm personally going. I've already talked to my wife. We're going to make a weekend of it. So come out the weekend of June 22nd to the National Museum of the Pacific War. If you can make it in Fredericksburg, Texas, you can meet Steve. I'll be there. Check out War Movie, and we can nerd out to what we're doing right now.
There you go.
All right. So that concludes episode 32. You can tune in next time for Hardtack episode 33. Similar to the same vein here, topic is Yellow Journalism, American Propaganda, and Overseas Expansion, where we're going to take a look at the role of the media and its relationship with the American government, the people, and intervention in foreign wars. Please don't forget to leave a review, subscribe on whichever platforms you use to consume your Hardtack. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening. And remember to keep your Hardtack dry.